Monitor now invites you to listen to Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference is Edward R. Murrow, director of the United States Information Agency. He will be interviewed by May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Kenneth Crawford, Newsweek, Robert McCormick, NBC News, and Lawrence Spivak. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
For nearly 20 years, beginning with the Voice of America, the government's overseas information program has been a subject of controversy. Once again, these activities are being debated in Congress. President Kennedy has requested additional funds to expand broadcasting in Latin America and in Southeast Asia. Our guest today is Mr. Edward R. Murrow, who on March 21st was sworn in as the new director of the United States Information Agency. He supervises an organization with 10,000 employees and a requested budget of $150 million. Mr. Murrow has a background of 25 years in radio and television. He formerly was vice president of the Columbia Broadcasting System, in charge of news and public affairs. He has become known to millions as a reporter, interviewer, commentator, and producer. And now we're ready to start the questions, Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Murrow, there was considerable criticism of the Eisenhower administration because in preparing for the summit last year, no USIA representative was consulted. Can you tell us what part your agency played in the preparation for the meeting at Vienna, if any?
We were consulted, Mr. Spivak. We were informed in regard to the position papers that were taken to Vienna. Our primary task in connection with this meeting, obviously, was to reflect and report the United States policy in connection with the meeting.
Did you have any place at all in the making of the policy in connection with Vienna?
The making of the policy?
Yes.
No.
When the president decided to meet with Premier Khrushchev at Vienna, did you consider the great propaganda risk we took in view of what had happened after past summit meetings?
There is obviously a risk in any meeting of this kind, but I think it was the policy and the purpose of the government from the outset to make it clear that no definitive results were expected, that these were conversations designed primarily to avoid future misunderstandings based upon miscalculations.
The president has long considered summit meetings of questionable value. Can you tell us why he felt it so important at this time to meet with Mr. Khrushchev?
I think primarily it was, as I said, because he wanted to avoid a miscalculation which might be based upon a misunderstanding, and it was his purpose to make quite clear to Mr. Khrushchev the American position on a variety of subjects.
Is there any more about that that you can tell us? What do you mean by the American position? Make it clear. Hasn't our position...
In relation to Laos, in relation to the resumption of nuclear testing, in relation to Berlin.
Well,
I don't think I could go beyond that.
No, hasn't our position been made clear over and over again on Berlin, and hasn't it been made clear on Laos and on nuclear testing? We've spent 2 years now trying to make our position clear. What was the president trying to do that hadn't already been done on those?
I should have thought the president was trying to make his position clear directly to Mr. Khrushchev in order that there be no misunderstanding.
Mr. McCormick.
As a matter of mechanics, Mr. Murrow, in how will you go about determining your policy and the Voice of America policy, particularly on assessing the results of the Vienna talks?
Well, we shall obviously not attempt to assess them until something has transpired as a result. The conversations, as you know, according to the communique, were labeled as useful. I think we shall have to wait to see what happens, particularly at the two conferences in Geneva, before anyone can judge as to the results. Meanwhile, we shall simply report it.
Well, isn't the world view of us, which is what presumably you present to the world, isn't that just about as important as our basic policy? I mean, don't you think you should be in on the actual making of the decisions?
I think it is trite and true to say that only good policy makes good propaganda. When I said that I was not in on the making of the decisions, what I meant to say, Mr. McCormick, was that I have no illusions that I am the Secretary of State We are consulted regarding the probable foreign reactions to a given line of United States policy. No basic United States policy has yet been divulged in the course of these meetings, either in Paris or in Vienna.
Well, going on to one other thing, then, are you represented in such things as the the disarmament talks or the nuclear ban talks on a day-to-day basis? Do you know intimately what's going on there and what our policies are?
I do indeed.
Mrs. Craig.
I'm interested in your saying that they ask you for your estimate of the probable reaction of a certain action, course of action is decided upon or a policy chosen. How much effect do you get from what you tell them then?
Mrs. Craig, I think the only way I can answer that is to say that I have adequate opportunity to argue. I do not win all the arguments, obviously, and I hope not to lose them all. But to be specific, we have made an estimate as to the probable reaction to a resumption of nuclear testing. Have had an opportunity to discuss this in great detail.
Now, I believe you said that you were called in on the Castro deal on prisoners from the outset. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that you gave your opinion in a matter of hours.
That is correct.
Would you tell us what that opinion was as to the probable reaction?
My opinion, Mrs. Craig, was that Castro had rather blustered himself into a very considerable blunder, and that the reaction, particularly in Latin America and Western Europe, would be what it was.
Did you pay any attention at all to the whether or not it violated the Logan Act in negotiating with a foreign government by this private committee?
This, Mrs. Craig, is no part of my function. As you know, the agency operates only outside the United States. I was not consulted regarding the Logan Act or the matter of tax exemption for the committee. That would have been entirely outside my purview.
Did you not have to consider the probable reaction in Latin America?
I did consider the probable reaction in Latin America.
Yes, you contributed, I believe, to the fund taken up.
Yes, I did.
Yes. So you must approve of its being done by a private agency rather than the government?
I do, yes.
Why do you do that when we may get mixed up with a foreign government over terms? Suppose we get in trouble with Castro as to the terms, whether they're bulldozers or tractors, or how many prisoners and what kind, and whether they're brainwashed and become spies when they get back here.
I don't think, Mrs. Craig, anyone can predict the course of these negotiations, but it seemed to me that a spontaneous reaction of this kind was entirely in the American tradition, and that it would produce the response it did produce throughout Latin America and Western Europe. I think it is also significant in this connection that neither Moscow nor Peking has gone along with Castro in this operation, and that the communist press in Latin America has very largely maintained what might be called an embarrassed silence.
Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Murrow, what is the general policy of the Voice of America with respect to reporting just the bare facts or injecting some propaganda? What is your general policy on this?
Our general policy is to report the facts. It is also true that we place different emphasis on a story depending upon the area to which the broadcast is aimed. But it is our feeling that we must stay with the facts, even though sometimes they hurt us.
What do you do in Russia, for example, in the Soviet Union itself? What are you trying to accomplish there? Do you feel that you're talking to people who are not essentially hostile to us as a people? Are you trying to win them over, or are you trying to keep them just friendly as they are?
I think we're trying to give them, to a large extent, Mr. Crawford, or what they do not get, one, a reflection of significant and responsible controversy, two, the facts of the situation, three, to stimulate their curiosity, to arouse their appetite regarding not only this country, but the rest of the free world. but basically it is the old-fashioned newsman's effort to inform.
Do you do anything in China?
Yes, we do. We broadcast to China. Our signal does not reach over all of China, but there are, I believe, 4 or 5 transmitters working in Chinese.
And the same general objective, I think.
That is right.
Mr. Spivak.
Well, a moment ago, I think you said that you made an assessment of what world opinion would be if we resume nuclear testing. Can you tell us what that assessment was?
No, I'm sorry, I cannot.
As you know, there are a great many people in this country who'd like to abolish your bureau. What do you think would happen if they did? If we did?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I am probably the last one to make an objective assessment of that. But I can suggest a few things that would happen. There would be 8 million books that circulate in our libraries that would not circulate. There would be 150 million people each week that now look at USIS films that would not see them. There would be roughly 300,000 people now studying English in our classes that would not be studying English. In addition to our broadcasts, our television service, and our book translations program. So I think the loss would be considerable.
Mr. Murray, can you point to any place in the world where we've been successful in winning the minds of men where we might not have been if your agency hadn't been operating?
Well, this is a very difficult thing because one cannot isolate the impact of our instruments from general policy. And when you say, can I give you a specific instance where this agency has changed the minds of men, as reflected, I assume you mean, in terms of national policy in a given country.
So can you give us any instance where that you can point to directly where you've been worth the money we've spent, which is what, $110 million a year or thereabouts?
Well, roughly. In terms of influencing or rather determining national policy, I could not give you a specific instance.
In terms of winning the people of another nation, do you think, for example, have you any indication that you're making any progress within the Soviet Union? Or within China, for example?
Evidence as to inside the Soviet Union, obviously not.
Then you really
I can give you one or two brief anecdotes, Mr. Spivak, if they would interest you. We opened a library consisting of 1,500 standard works in a small town in Africa. In 3.5 weeks, it was stripped bare. On another occasion, we opened a library. There were 3 policemen guarding the door to hold back the crowd. The first 3 inside were the police. For 1 week, a contest on the Voice of America in English only, offering to give away transistors. We received 67,000 pieces of mail as a result of that in a single week. We have now, in Latin America, relays on local medium wave stations, on 237 medium wave stations. Well, all of this adds up to a very considerable impact, but when you say specifically...
Well, may I take a specific instance that was recently in controversy, and that is the question of spending about $900,000 or $950,000 to show The Skin of Your Teeth and 1 or 2 other plays. I'm sure you think it was worth the money. Can you tell us what something of that kind accomplishes?
This is certainly in the area of the intangible. It is a demonstration of American culture, of American dramatic ability. This repertory company was created at the request or the instigation of the Cultural Affairs Division of the State Department. I can add to that only that I have seen the reviews all the way from Madrid through the Netherlands to the Middle East, and the reviews have been almost universally favorable. Now, whether that had a considerable impact on public opinion in general, I would not be able to...
Is that going to be cut from your budget, or are you going ahead with that, do you think?
That has not yet been determined.
Mr. McCormick.
Well, quite apart from selling us to the rest of the world, Mr. Murrow, what are you going to do about selling your own agency to Congress? Is there any way to prevent you from being the perennial whipping boy of the Congressional Appropriations Committees?
Well, Mr. McCormick, our budget for the next fiscal year, if we get it, will be roughly that of 1 combat-loaded Polaris submarine. We could run our agency for 400 years on a single year's appropriation for the Defense Department. This is obviously not the forum to argue about the adequacy of financing for the agency. And I must say also that it is not possible to expand suddenly, because huge sums of money are not very useful unless you have, one, the program, and two, the trained personnel and the plan to use them. I think this is a slow process of persuasion.
Well, on the other hand, though, in the same area of criticism, the vice president came back from his trip to Southeast Asia, and of all the agencies that he discussed, the one he singled out for criticism by name was your own in a speech at the press club. Was that a help to you?
Obviously, it was no particular help. I have not had an opportunity to discuss it with the vice president. I don't know the basis of his criticism, and I hope shortly to go to Southeast Asia and look for myself.
Well, he didn't discuss this criticism with you before he made it publicly.
I had one small, very brief conversation with him about it.
Mr. Morrow, it was brought out during these Appropriation Committee hearings that quite a large part of your broadcast in Latin America is in the English language, a smaller part in the Spanish language, and no Portuguese. Is that going to be changed, or was there any reason for that existing in the first place?
The reason, as I understand it in the past, was a belief that a great many of the so-called opinion makers in Latin America would understand English. However, to answer your question specifically, we are now broadcasting 6 hours a day in Spanish. Starting in July, we will be broadcasting 18 hours a day in Spanish, and we will be broadcasting 4 hours per day in Portuguese. So we have altered the program structure there very considerably.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Morrow, some years ago, Supreme Court Justice Douglas made a long trip through Asia, came back and wrote a book in which he said that most of the Asian countries are simply not ready for democracy. They don't know what we're even talking about. Now, how do you expect to make an impression on our very advanced kind of government, our concept of democracy, on the people you're trying to reach in Asia and Africa?
This, Mrs. Craig, is one of the obvious difficulties, because it is my view, at least, that this is not only a battle for men's minds, but to a considerable extent it's also a battle for their bellies. And that below a certain caloric intake, it is not reasonable to expect people to be interested in words like freedom and dignity and justice under the law and so forth. And I think all that we can do in this agency is to try to give them information that is understandable, not to expect that they will imitate us in all particulars of our economic, social, or political structure.
Well, will you try then to give them some idea of an intermediate kind of government between their tribalism and our kind of democracy? Will we accept that, or do we expect them to go all the way, which they can't do?
I have the feeling, Mrs. Craig, that we in this country too often have expected that countries to which we have acted as both fairy godmother and midwife should imitate us in all particulars. Obviously, they can't, as you say, and some of them, if they could, would not. And I think this is a most gradual process.
How do you explain the fact that some of those who have had democracy have now given it up for dictatorship and various other kinds of government which are not democracy in our concept of the term?
This, in part, I would suggest, is because they lack the trained personnel to operate a democracy, partly because a democracy is a very complex method of governing, partly because in some cases they have turned to the military in an effort to produce discipline and order in an effort to solve their economic problems.
Will you make it plain in your broadcast to them that we do not expect them to be exactly like us?
We have done that, and we will continue to do so.
Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Morrow, one of the most important things with this new administration, I take it, is a matter of priorities. You can't do everything at once, and you start with something. Are you consulted about the priorities?
I'm not quite sure. What kind of priorities, Mr. Crawford?
What I'm thinking of particularly is over $1 billion for a moonshot, taking priority over some of the things that could be done here on Earth. Are you consulted in this area?
In this particular area, I was not. And I would suspect the reason is that my competence in the area of moonshots is not very considerable, Mr. Crawford.
Mine isn't either. I was just wondering, since the moonshot seems principally for the benefit of our image around the world, whether in this case you might not have been.
In that case, I was not, no.
Mr. Morrow,
Mr. Spivak.
In a speech you recently made, I believe it was at the press club, you said, and I quote, "On Cuba we have no choice but to be truthful and complete. We carry the whole story." Why does an agency that is, for a better name, a propaganda agency, have to carry the whole story? When you were a broadcaster, for example, you did a very careful and a good job of selection of certain facts to make your point. Why can't your agency do that on matters like Cuba or Alabama?
I'm not sure I take your meaning on my selection of items in order to make the point, Mr. Spivak, but to answer your question, I think the only thing the Voice of America, for example, has is credibility, is believability. And when we went to 19 hours a day, just when the Cuban operation began, we were carrying, for example, Raul Roa's speeches from the United Nations, and he was attacking us severely. It seemed to me we had no alternative but to carry it as it was. We reported the editorial comments in this country and in Western Europe when those comments were critical, because I think our credibility is our great asset. And we cannot suppress information. There are too many, if we wanted to, there are too many other sources.
Well, but the other, so we confirm it, though. See, and why don't we explain it? Why don't we put it in perspective? Take, for example, the situation of Alabama. There are various ways of reporting Alabama. You can report the race riots, or you can report the fact that the United States government is trying to solve the problem. That's what I mean by selection of facts. I was meaning to impugn your broadcast.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you.
Well, in Harvest of Shame, for example, you didn't tell the whole agricultural story. You told this part of the story you felt it was important to tell. Why can't you do that with the agents?
Well, because in the Harvest of Shame, and I'm sure you don't want to go into this in detail, this was a matter of doing a piece designed to reveal a small segment of the agricultural population in this country. The viewer in this country is sufficiently sophisticated and experienced to know that that does represent only a partial segment. The viewer abroad might not be equally experienced and sophisticated. But to go back to Alabama, which I take it was the thrust of your question, we did do exactly that, and you will be interested to know that a study of reaction around the world to the Alabama incident indicates that there is an increasing awareness, one, of the difference between state and federal authority, two, in this case, an increasing appreciation of the speed and effectiveness with which the federal government worked. So in that case, we tried to do exactly what you suggest.
We have about 2 minutes. Mr. McCormick.
Well, I have one quick one I'd like to get in, if I could. In your press club speech, Mr. Murrow, you made some remarks that brought us all up a little bit short about discrimination in Washington, racial discrimination that was hurting our African diplomats and consequently the government. Have you had any favor? Has anything happened as a result of that to improve the situation?
Nothing, so far as I know, Mr. McCormick.
Was the reaction to it pretty sharp?
I have had no adverse reaction. Some mail, although I have not seen an analysis of it.
But apparently it did no permanent good, so far as you know.
Not so far as I know.
Mrs. Craig.
Yeah, Mr. Morrow, in your testimony to the Senate committee, you made a great point about the training which you give to your people so that they shall be suited for the task. Are you for the Peace Corps of amateurs who are non-career?
Mrs. Craig, I think I must give you a bureaucratic answer to that, but I believe if the people are properly trained, the selection is all important. If they are properly selected and trained, I can see great potential benefits coming from the operation.
Then why not put them in an expanded foreign service and pay them?
Well, I am sure that most of the activities they are going to undertake would not be suitable for foreign service officers.
The new ambassador from Guinea said at the White House the other day on television, when asked about the Peace Corps, that he wanted trained people and felt that they should be well paid.
Mr. Merle.
Mr. Crawford.
How do you like sitting there instead of here? And I ask you this because the report has been printed that you're unhappy as a bureaucrat.
Mr. Crawford, it is much more comfortable sitting there than sitting here. As to being unhappy about being a bureaucrat, I am not. I am enjoying it.
Mr. Spivak.
At the present time, we do not exchange libraries with the USSR. Would you favor such an exchange?
I would.
Is that being considered today?
Not actively, so far as I know. The only exchange now is in the area of persons and in the area of films. We do, however, have three exhibits going to the Soviet Union. One is showing there now in the field of plastics.
Will you propose an exchange of libraries?
I must confess, Mr. Spivak, it hadn't occurred to me, but your mind is resourceful, and I will give it every consideration.
I'm sorry that I shall have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.